Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Property and Local Tax Division to order at this time. Three bills on the agenda today. Representative Sundin, as a non-member of the committee, you get to bat first. Welcome. Welcome back, I guess I should say. The chair will move House File 1895 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Sundin, proceed, please.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I appreciate you hearing me first here. It's been a busy day, and it's going to continue to be so. In front of you, you have House File 1895, which grants taxation authority to the Soil and Water District in Carlton County here. With me today, I've got two of the Soil and Water operatives that have worked hard on this bill, and they can explain all the details to you, answer any questions. They've collaborated with federal authorities and with the county board as well. In your packets, you will see financial impact from the Minnesota revenue, which is neutral, negligible. You'll see from the Office of the Carlton County Auditor Treasurer the impact on the homesteads within the county, very minimal. And you'll also see a letter of support from the Carlton County Auditor Treasurer reflecting the minutes of a September 23rd, 2013 meeting where it was resolved that the county board and Carlton County Board of Commissioners does hereby conditionally approve entering into an agreement with the district whereby the county will serve as a co-guarantee of the loan buy-in between the district and the USDA. This is just a resolution of support for their hard work of the on this project. So that's the bill. If you want me to go through it line by line, I could, but
I think let's, if we can, Representative Sundin, let's hear from Mr. Ninas.
Okay, this is Jim Ninas.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Jim Ninas. I'm an elected supervisor for the Carlton County Soil and Water District. And I would like to thank Chairman Dabney and the members of the committee and also your staff for the help that they have shown. And so I appreciate that very much. It makes appearing here today much easier and a little more relaxing, so I thank you for your support in that. Carlton County Soil and Water District has been working with the United States Department of Ag on a community facilities loan for a new office building that would serve the needs of the University of Minnesota Extension Service in Carlton County, the Carlton County Economic Development Authority, and then also the Carlton County Soil and Water District. Each one of those entities are currently occupying space that is leased and has been determined to be substandard space for one reason or the other. As an example, the University of Minnesota Extension Service is housed in the City of Carlton Town Hall or City Hall, located on the second floor of their office building, which is not at all handicap accessible. And so that's made it very difficult for the clients that they deal with and also the staff that they employ to get in and out of their facility. They currently have one of their technicians working in the basement of that facility in a makeshift office because that person can no longer climb the stairs to occupy her old office space. Though there certainly is a number of needs, the Soil and Water District is located in a private sector transportation building. And with the cold winter that we've had, I cannot tell you how many days that staff has worked inside of that facility where the top temperature of the day reached a balmy 51 degrees. It's an old concrete building that was converted into office space for the Soil and Water District about 10 years ago, and ever since then we've been looking to find some suitable space. We applied for a loan with the Department of USDA, And that loan application is a four-stage process. You have to go through the first stage before you can get to the second stage. We went through Part A, which is the first stage. We filled out all the documentation, which talked about the need for a new building for us. And we had that approved in November of 2012. So we started on the second stage, which is the financial stage of our application. It talks about the cost of the building that we're looking at, which you will find on your information from the Carlton County Auditor. It's a $2 million project, which we're proposing to pay back within 30 years at the maximum. As we talked about the cost of that facility, the subject about paying that loan back came up, and the USDA, for some reason, has never dealt with a soil and water district on a building project that involved a loan through the community facilities program that they operate. They actually thought that the soil and water district, being it's a government entity which elects its own board members, had a levying capacity which would guarantee them that we would be able to repay our loan once that project was completed and payments became due. And so that became quite a discussion with USDA. And so one of the things that the local office did, the USDA local office did, was asked if we couldn't get the Carlton County Board of Commissioners to agree to be a co-signer for that loan, so that they would have a public entity with levying capacity being able to repay that loan should the Soil and Water District not be able to accomplish that task. And the resolution that Representative Sundin talked to you about is actually the resolution that the county board passed, and it's a resolution of support for the project. And they also agreed to be the co-guarantor of the loan on this project. So we thought that we had our problems answered. So the local office of the USDA, which is located in Baxter, Minnesota, shipped this particular project up the line, and it got to the regional office. The regional office took a look at that, and they said that they would not accept the county board's ability or willingness to be the co-signer of that loan. They said the owner of the building must be able to make those payments and must have levy authority in order to guarantee those payments. They're used to working with fire districts, ambulance services, sanitary sewer districts, and townships, where every one of those entities have elected boards and have levy authority. So when they make loans to them, they know that those loans are going to be repaid. So we're here today because we're at the end of our line as far as this project goes, unless we get a levy authority, which is going to guarantee that we have the ability to pay back this loan. The starting date of our application, step one, is about a year and a half to a year and three quarters of a go. The USDA is getting very nervous about the information that was given at that time. They're saying that it's outdated. If we don't get levy authority during this legislative session, we're going to have to start all over and try and fund this project in a totally different manner. The Carlton County Board has been supportive from the start. They not only have passed the resolution that's before you, they've not only committed to trying to help us financially by paying for the engineering services that we've utilized thus far. They are also willing to donate a parcel of land that they have in ownership, which is right next to a county transportation building which they own, and that land is valued at $100,000. They're going to give that to the Soil and Water District at no cost. Should we be able to secure this loan and proceed with our building project? We're pretty much stuck unless we get levy authority on this project. And so I'm hoping that you will look favorably upon our request and give it kind consideration. You may question why the county doesn't do this on its own. And I might as well answer that question for you, because I'm sure somebody's thinking about it. And if somebody's thinking about it, my guess is there's probably more than one that would like to have that answered. The site that we are currently looking at, which is adjoining the Carleton County Transportation Building, is in a township outside of the city where the county seat is located. And so the county board originally had intended that site to be the location for their new county campus. They were challenged on their ability to take the county offices out of the city that is designated as the county seat. So they decided they didn't want to fight that battle. So they said that if the Soil and Water District is going to do a project, they can utilize those acreages that they had set aside for their own building. The city of Carleton, which is actually the county seat, knows that the Extension Service and the Carleton County Soil and Water District has a need for office space and equipment space so that we can store things like tree planting equipment, temporary cattle chutes, temporary pipe fencing for these gathering yards for this livestock. And the city of Carleton really doesn't want that in their city limits, taking up valuable space that they feel is more suited to other types of business opportunities. So the city would like to see us in a rural area.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Ninus. One moment. Representative Mahoney, I'd like to formally call the committee to order at this time now that we have quorum. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at your blueprints here. And, you know, there's been another group that's come to the House chambers that wants an auditorium with about 300 and some odd seats. You're not going to ask for something with 300 and odd seats, are you?
Mr. Ninus. You don't have to take this one seriously.
That was just a no.
I could respond, but I think it was just, and I take it that way.
Yeah.
But I would guarantee the representative, if he stopped to see us, I would find him a seat.
There you go. All right. Representative Erickson and then Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late. I was having an interview on a radio station, but I want to know from council, are we setting a precedent if we go ahead with a project such as this? I know you have historical knowledge.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I guess I'm not really sure what the answer to that question is. I'm not aware of other of us granting this authority to other water, soil and water conservation districts. Perhaps the testifier could speak to that. It's certainly not a typical request that we get here, but I don't know what the normal arrangements that these districts have for office space. I don't think they're generally building their own buildings, but perhaps the testifier could.
Mr. Ninus.
Chairman Dabney and Representative Erickson. There is not a standard for office space for the soil and water districts throughout the state of Minnesota. Typically, they co-share space with some of our partners, basically with NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, USDA, the Federal Forest Service, those types of agencies. There are a couple throughout the state that actually have office space within the courthouse itself, and so there is not a standard. The one thing about Carlton County that makes us just a little bit unique in our request is that we do not have a federal agency housed within our county that would allow us to share that space. So one is there isn't a standard. The second thing is that I've learned from the couple of districts that have space within the courthouse itself that our staff is not always looked kindly upon when they come back from the field and they have been out to a feedlot to work with a farmer, or they've been out into a stream taking samples from that stream, and they come back and they're not always the courthouse gets a little dirty from them, and they're not always as welcome as one might think in the courthouse. And so if you look at the building that we're proposing, the entrance for our employees coming into that building is a mudroom. And they'll be taking some of those dirty boots off and waiters and stowing them in that mudroom. And so they're not going to be tracking unwanted materials throughout the building.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, sir, I think the levy authority, though, is also something that would be new to us, allowing a Soil and Water Conservation District to have levy authority, especially in regard to buildings.
Mr. Ninus.
Chairman Dabney, Representative Erickson. I looked at levy authorities in a broad sense before asking representatives of Sundin to help us with this, and this actually is probably very similar to a sanitary sewer district, which from time to time gets special levy authority, and they build plants and office space within those plants. I know that last year in our particular area there was a Cloquet Emergency Service District that was granted levy authority, so they had the ability to go out and cover costs and equipment and building maintenance for space within their service area. And really, maybe it's not a good comparison, but if you look at the ambulance service and you need an ambulance and they come to your house, they're saving your life. I think the Soil and Water Districts are out there preserving the water that we drink and keeping us all healthy, and we really kind of fall into a similar situation as a ambulance service and a sewer district and some of those folks.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question, sir. Will any citizens, any voters have the opportunity to weigh in on this opportunity you might have to levy authority? In other words, will they be notified? Does there have to be a resolution? Does there have to be a vote? Is there any way that the constituency who will pay these extra property taxes have a say in your decision making?
Mr. Ninus.
Chairman Dabney and Representative Erickson, one of the requirements of the Office of the USDA as we got into step two of this application was that we were required to hold a public hearing. So that the taxpayers from the county and the area that were looking at constructing this building had an opportunity to come and talk to us about our plans, and we had the opportunity to explain what we had. And we have conducted that public hearing. We advertised that in the local news media, the local newspapers, and all of the appropriate places that are required by law. And so I hope that we have satisfied that requirement with USDA, and also I feel good that we gave the taxpayers of Carlton County an opportunity to come and weigh in.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was looking at the memo in the packet here from the Office of the Auditor. And I'm assuming that the calculations you made here, the $2 million is not just the construction cost, but is the amortized cost over 30 years?
That's a
Mr. Ninus. Okay.
Chairman Dabney, and I'm sorry I missed your Hurtis, Representative Hurtis. That's a complete pass with everything thrown into there and a 10% contingency. And so the architect that was hired, the architectural firm, said that it was standard operating business to add a 10% contingency to that. That includes the building, the site prep, and the well, the tapping into the Western Lake Superior sewer, sanitary sewer line, and everything in order to get this project completed.
Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I just want to be a little more clear in my follow-up. What I did is I multiplied your levy amount, 67,000 times 30 years, 30-year period. It came up to 2,010,000. I guess where I was going with this line of questioning is I saw your costs here on $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 property. Annually, that's a very negligible amount to levy the money to service this debt. And I just kind of looked at some factor charts here. Had you ever considered not amortizing that over 30 years? If you increase the payment by roughly 20%, you could retire that in 15 years and you'd save the taxpayers quite a bit of money. The cost, the impact is $10 instead of $488. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if it was a big bill, I could see it, but you could save probably a couple $100,000 to the taxpayer by taking a more aggressive amortization schedule.
Chairman Dabney,
Representative
Curtis. The 30 years was a length of time that we kind of talked about early on, and it was prior to the auditor calculating out the repayment cost to the property owner. And so I looked at that when I got this particular information. In fact, Representative Sundin asked me to get that probably 2 months ago about, and I didn't realize that the cost was as low as it appears. And so that is something that we have talked about, but I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time until I found out whether or not we were going to be able to achieve our levy authority. But I would agree with you that I don't want you to take it the wrong way, because $2 million is a lot of money. It's a lot of money to me, and it's a lot of money to the taxpayer. But I think that you're right. We could pay that back in a lot less time without having too much of a negative impact on the taxpayer in Carlton County. Since this letter was put together, I found out that the average residential homestead market value for Carlton County is $146,600. That's the average. And so that would calculate out to be approximately, for a 30-year payback, $3.66 a year. And I know that there's unemployment, and I know that there's people that are hurting. There's retirees out there. But I think there's going to be a little bit of a happy medium that we can get to from the 30-year payback to something that's tolerable to them. And we will work at that. It's just that we don't have that number right now today.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Representative Hurtas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my final comment is I think any taxpayer would rather see that disappear from their levy on their property tax statement in 15 years rather than 30. So, I mean, like I said, I'm looking at the rate factors, and you have that conversation. If you should get approval for this, you're correct. It's such a low amount per year. You would save the taxpayers quite a bit of money by retiring it in half the time.
All right. Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, you know, sort of in response to Representative Erickson's question, I mean, this is another new special taxing district. And I can't, I don't see how we wouldn't admit that it is precedent setting. Together with the Carlton County EMSRB board or whatever. I mean, you know, it seems to me we want fewer streams of revenue coming from the taxpayer, so the taxpayer has some ability to, you know, get their arms around it and know who's taxing them and when they can speak up and where they have to go to complain. And to me, I don't see the need. I don't see why we don't have a county that's willing to step up and do what has to be done here. And I don't understand at all USDA. Why are they encouraging it to take on debt and build buildings? What is their interest?
Mr. Dennis, let's focus on the narrow. I think you built the base for why you're coming forward. Whether Representative Runbeck agrees with that or not is a different question. But that, can you speak to the USDA and why, what their requirements are, please?
Would you please restate your question? I'm sorry, just so I'm making sure that I address the question that she has in mind.
Sure. Representative Runbeck, to your question.
Thank you, Mr. Please. Chair. Federal level of government, you know, working with a very low, you know, entry level government, small soil and conservation district. What is their interest? Why are they involved in, you know, Carlton County, and why do they want to see you have a building? Just don't understand.
All right, Mr. Ninus.
Okay, Chairman Dabney, I think I have that now.
Okay,
Representative Runbeck. The Soil and Water, or the USDA, in their loan program, their community facilities loan program, that loan program was set up by the federal government to take care of government entities that may have a hard time going out onto the open market and securing financing. They're set up to help fire districts. They're set up to help townships. They're set up to help the sanitary sewer districts. Folks that the private sector banking industry probably would be shying away from. And so the whole purpose of that program is to hit that governmental agency need. Now, you would ask, why wouldn't the county board step up and build this project or this building? And the crux of the matter is that we're not a county department head. We're called the Carlton County Soil and Water District, but we're not a county entity. The Carlton County Extension Service is not a county entity. And so for that reason, they're not real excited about taking care of our building needs. And that's the reason we're going the direction we are.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I mean, the size of this project is really nominal. So, you know, no one's going to get hung out to dry. No taxpayers are going to be left, you know, holding the bag. But I'm aware of another instance in Minnesota where USDA got very involved in an expensive water treatment plant, and the small city has no capacity to pay the loan. And, you know, you have to wonder exactly what USDA knows when they go into a small community. You know, it makes me very nervous that they think they should encourage things that maybe they shouldn't. So thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 1895? Seeing none. Representative Sundin, any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thank the testifier for showing up today and doing such an excellent job. And just to follow up a little bit, the USDA is also helping out in Carlton County with a sanitary sewer project around Big Lake, and this cooperation between government entities is nothing new, and we're very proud to have citizens like this working on this good piece of legislation, and I urge support. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you both.
I thank the chair and the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Representative Downey. Would you like to move your bill before the committee?
Thank you. I'd like to move House File 1884 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Members may remember back to last year when we started this committee early in the session with a report by the Property Tax Working Group.
Representative Runbeck, if I recall, you co-chaired the working
group? Right, a couple years.
A couple of years, yes. It was a lengthy process. There were a number of proposals that working group came forward with. Traditionally here at the Minnesota House, working group proposals sit on the shelf once they've been reported out. But I thought we could do something different this year with the property tax working group report. One of the key suggestions that they brought forward was a reduction in the number of property tax classifications in Minnesota. We have, I can never quite keep track, about 56 different property tax classifications, I believe. Most of the neighboring states and most states in the country, more like 4 or 5, if I recall correctly. The closest competitor to us, both geographically and I believe numerically, is South Dakota, which I believe has 12. So, you know, pick any of those numbers that you so choose. We're well outside of the norm here in Minnesota, and while we'd like to think we're above in everything, this is one where being above isn't necessarily a good thing. So, what House File 1884 does is attempt to reform the property tax system in Minnesota by reducing a number of the smaller classifications that affect very few properties. I recognize that a wholesale elimination of, let's say, 50 property tax classifications is a little too big of a bite to take on. My mother always warned me about my eyes being bigger than my stomach, and I heard her wisdom as I reviewed the property tax report. Instead, we look at eliminating, as I said, a number of the smaller used provisions. In fact, one of the provisions, the 2E provision, is not in use anywhere in the state. No county has authorized it. I'm really thinking we can get rid of a property tax classification that we don't actually use. It's a bold move, but it goes to the core of House File 1884. This will have the effect of a slight increase in property taxes for the properties who have been getting a special benefit, but the way property taxes work, it should also yield a small decrease for all the other properties in that jurisdiction, because the properties that have been getting the special classification will be coming on in their full valuation. Mr. Chair, with that, I know there are some individuals in the audience who wish to testify. I don't know if Mr. Hines has anything that he wishes to speak to. No?
I was just going to say, Representative Dabney, I do see there is an amendment for the bill. Would you like to move that?
As soon as I find it. Well, this is awkward. I don't believe I have a copy of the amendment. Oh.
Thank you.
Thank you all. It's nice to see us working bipartisanly. I'd like to... Well, you often are, Representative Erickson. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the H-1884A1 amendment to be before the committee to get the bill in the shape that I would like.
Very good. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Thank you very much.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
And with that, Mr. Chair, I am aware that there are individuals in the audience who wish to testify.
Very good. I see Mr. Rolf Erickson from Reform Property Taxes Minnesota is first up. Mr. Erickson, my apologies. I do see a member does have a question for Representative Dabney. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple quick questions. One, will this change in our property tax classifications get us out of the top 5% of, having the most classifications of any state in the union?
Mr. Chair, that's a technical question that I'm not... I don't know that I'm in the best position to answer. I haven't recently reviewed the rank ordered listing of states and property tax classifications, I would imagine will still be high on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Downey, I thought you mentioned that there were no other states that had more. But that was just our neighbors, maybe.
Mr. Chair, I believe we're the highest in the country. And Mr. Hines is both furrowing his brow and shaking his head. So between the two, I'm taking that as yes, we are the highest
in
the country.
So we will most, Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Downey, I assume then that we will still be in the top 5%.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I think so. We're making progress. We're looking to make progress.
Possibly council would like to weigh in?
Perhaps he would.
Mr. Hine.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I think that, and Representative Torkelson, I think that those statements are all true, that we're very high, and this will probably not get us out of the top 5%, but I don't have good figures to cite you either.
We're all, Minnesota, where all the property tax classifications are above average.
Another quick question, Mr. Chair. Is this an official on-session bill, or is it just a kind of a...
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, it is in the spirit of the on-session.
In the spirit. Thank you.
Thank you for your patience, Mr. Erickson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Rolf Erickson, the chairman of Reform Property Taxes, Minnesota. And we just briefly would like to commend Representative Dabney and the board for actually bringing this forward. I know that the Property Tax Working Group spent a lot of time and came up with a lot of good suggestions, and I think this is a very good start, and I hope that you will continue to find things that we can do to make our system simpler, because it is really a nightmare. I'm also an assessor and I work with this, and when you get these cross classifications on property, it is unbelievable. And when you try to explain this to people, that's the worst thing about it. So anything we can do to simplify and make it easier for the people to understand, we commend it. And thank you again. That's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Are there questions from members? Representative Mahoney.
Representative Dabney, I mean, I'm just wondering if you have any, if that report contains the history as to where these classifications came from. And I don't really want to make fun of anyone, but when did we put seasonal housing for farm workers or non-commercial aircraft storage hangars located adjacent? I'm just kind of wondering where they came from and, you know, which particular member we're going to hear or past member is going to be a little upset at us.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, there are bodies buried everywhere around this place.
All right. Thank you. And I do see next on the list of testifiers, I have Mr. Frank DiLapo of the General Manager of the Minneapolis Club. Welcome to the committee, sir, and please state your name for the record.
My name is Frank DiLapo. I am the general manager at the Minneapolis Club. Please allow me to apologize in advance if I commit any procedural mistake or faux pas, for this is my first time in session here. I'm not sure exactly how to proceed, so if you will forgive me, I'll take your lead.
If you'll forgive me, sir, I think we'll be on equal footing there. So.
We don't eat citizens, so you're safe.
Thank you. May I proceed?
Yeah, yes, please.
Thank you. If you don't mind, I do have a handout for you folks just to help familiarize you with what we're talking about. And if you need more, there's some I could. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to read a brief little statement, make a couple of little salient points, and then be happy to answer any questions if you so deem appropriate. May I proceed?
Yes, please.
Thank you, sir. The purpose of my testimony before the Property and Local Tax Division is to provide information that will assist the division in their deliberation towards the recommendation to eliminate certain minor property tax classifications. Before I proceed, I'd like to just point out that on your paperwork, it is listed as 4C parentheses, six indoor fitness clubs operated by nonprofit corporations in the metro area. And that's why I'm here today, because I do believe that that really doesn't give you a full picture of what we're talking about. So with that said, I'll continue. The Minneapolis Club's property taxes are currently based on a social club classification. This classification is one of the tax classifications before the division for consideration of elimination. The Minneapolis Club is a social club located in downtown Minneapolis. It was established in 1883. The current clubhouse is located at 729 2nd Avenue. The current clubhouse is the fourth clubhouse that the club has occupied since its inception. The groundbreaking for the current clubhouse took place in 1906 and was completed in 1908. The reclassification of the Minneapolis Club to a commercial tax classification would result in a 94% property tax increase. The documents provided will outline for the division how the portions of, for the purposes of eliminating the social club tax classification and how it will impact the Minneapolis Club. The proposed elimination for the social club tax classification will have dire consequences for the club and most likely will result in its closing. The most important point for the division to consider in their deliberations is in recommending elimination of the social club tax classification is that no one individual or corporation is responsible for ensuring the club's property taxes are paid. Unlike a business, the Minneapolis Club operating model is comprised of members' dues and ancillary spending at the clubhouse. Members of the club are under no obligation to maintain their individual membership. They can resign at any time without providing a reason. The amount the resigned members spent towards their club operations budget then falls to the remaining members to make up the difference. If enough members resign because they find their dues too high, the club will find itself in an unable position to operate financially. The club's business model will fail and the club will cease to exist. With that said, there's a couple points that I would like to share with the club, with the committee. The Minneapolis Club's business model is one that we're a non-for-profit club, and the members share the common expenses associated with operating the clubhouse. My job as the manager is to charge no more, no less necessary to operate the clubhouse annually. So with that said, if we were to have a 94% increase in taxes, there's some dire, you know, consequences that I'll get to in just a moment. A couple of things for you to take into consideration. I believe that the public perception is significantly different than the reality of what goes on in the club. The reality is that the club serves as an important place in the Twin Cities community for leaders to meet and do work on behalf of themselves and the citizens at large. One out of three private events that are held at the club are held by nonprofit organizations. I passed around to you folks a list of the nonprofit organizations that are club members at the club, and it comprises almost 10% of our 900 members. So that's for something for you to consideration to. Organizations such as Bridging, the United Way, Summit Academy, Minneapolis Foundation, Catholic Charities, Ordway Theater, Minnesota Orchestra are to name a few of those. Significant social work and activities take place for charities, and they're organized at the Minneapolis Club. Recently, a non-member of the club who was waiting for the rest of their guests to arrive in the lobby said to me, "The most significant charitable work between Chicago and Denver takes place here at the Minneapolis Club." When this tax classification was put into place, it was put into place because there were several downtown social clubs. There was the Minneapolis Club, the Minneapolis Athletic Club, the St. Paul Athletic Club, and I believe the Minnesota Club, which was located here in downtown St. Paul. Of those four, only the Minneapolis Club remains. In 1908, when the Minneapolis Club was started, the nickname for Second Avenue was Clubhouse Row. There were six other private clubs up and down Second Avenue, and they've all gone away because they haven't kept up with the times, they haven't been able to meet the needs of their members, and they've perished. I believe that this club serves the city in a significant way. All we're asking for is to continue this current classification. It was brought forth some years ago to include the or to establish this classification because country clubs have a special classification under something called Green Acres, where because of their aesthetics and the amount of property that they hold, if they were taxed at the highest best use rate, for example, if they hold 30 acres, they would never be able to meet the tax burden based on the number of people that they have as club members. For us downtown, I believe we do much more work on behalf of the community than they would at country clubs, and all I ask is that you keep this classification in place. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. DiLapo. And are there any questions from members? Oh, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe it's a question to staff. I was just looking at the table that we've gotten that sort of says the current class rate and the rate under this bill. And I don't know that the breakpoint is between the 1.5 versus 2% rate, but from 1.25 to 1.5% is a 20% increase, and then from 1.25 to 2.0 is a 60% increase. So I don't understand how you could get to a 94% increase in taxes, and I just want to confirm that I'm understanding how this would apply, and if you could clarify what the cutoff point is between those two points. Because I think there may be some confusion about what the impact is would be, if either on my part or their part.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, the break point is $150,000. So most of their property would go into the 2% classification. And I think the way they're getting to that bigger number is because currently they're not responsible for paying any of the state CI or the state general levy, and under this proposal they would fall into a category that would require them to pay the state CI tax. And I think with those two factors, it was the 94% figure does not seem out of line to me.
Thank you. I didn't realize it made that change with the CI levy as well.
Additional questions from members? Seeing none, Mr. DiLapo, I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, committee.
And next on the list, I have Mr. Mark Peterson, the Cass County Assessor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Peterson, and please state your name for the record.
My name is Mark Peterson, and I'm currently employed as the County Assessor for Cass County, located in Walker, Minnesota, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And we'd like to be in support of House File 1884, and the reasons that have been mentioned prior to this is the Property Tax Working Group's findings from back in 2012. We were in support of that, and also our mission statement, or our legislative position statement, clearly states that MAO supports efforts to make the classification system more understandable by the continued consolidation of existing classes and avoiding the creation of new classes. We do so for the following reasons: easier for taxpayers to understand, streamline administration costs to local governments, and the tiered classification system increases complexity and produces unexpected property tax consequences. Another, as far as management nightmare, some of these things, all these programs typically require some sort of an application process, and from an administrative standpoint, certainly that adds cost, that adds time, and a lot of effort on staff to administer those. So we would just like to lend our support towards this. Any move towards simplification of the property tax system through eliminating of some classification or consolidating classifications, we are all for.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Are there any questions from members? Oh, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm struggling here to understand what's going on. So there's a shifting that's going to occur. So for for a Cass County assessor, who you have a lot of seasonal property in your area, what shift will occur so that you still get that same amount of value or higher?
Mr. Peterson.
Representative Erickson, Mr. Chairman. Basically, the shift will be on who pays what portion of the levy. Anytime you eliminate a program or a different classification, they get merged into another classification, certainly those rates change. Right. In the, for example, using the 2C classification, they currently get a 0.65% class rate. That would go back into the rural vacant land classification, which is a 1% rate. So there would be a shift there. They would see their taxes go up. And when they pay a little bit more piece of that tax pie, certainly others are going to see a little bit of a reduction. So it certainly is a shift. Anytime you eliminate or anytime you add classifications, there's always winners and there's always losers. But the problem is we've gotten to the point where we keep adding classifications and it just gets more and more complicated, that it's time to reverse. And as the Property Tax Working Group's conclusion came to, we need to start looking at eliminating some of these things and consolidating some of these classifications in order to simplify the system.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious. Does Leech have many seasonal restaurants located on the lake?
Mr. Peterson.
Representative Erickson, Mr. Chairman, we have approximately 7 restaurants that are getting that classification right
okay.
now.
Mm-hmm.
They're not all on Leech. Some may be on Gulf.
Okay.
On other lakes. So we do
yes,
have.
That's right.
Do have
you're a large county.
7 of
mm-hmm.
those.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifier. And, you know, is it fair to say, looking at these from your analysis, the way I read these is every one of these, if repealed, would be a tax cut for homeowners? I mean, in every case, there are multiple shifts that would go on, but if these were repealed, for example, right now, if you own a bed and breakfast facility, you're having the homeowners where your facility is pick up part of your property taxes. Or if you have a marina, the homeowners in the area are picking up part of your taxes. I mean, isn't that the case that in every one of these cases, if these classifications went away, the shift would benefit homeowners?
Mr. Peters.
Representative Lincheski and Mr. Chairman, certainly any time there's an increase in a class rate or a shift, there's going to be some winners. In this case, anybody that isn't involved with one of these mm-hmm. classifications that are seeing their rate go up is going to see some sort of a visible decrease because of the numbers we're talking about here, but certainly the shift, those people that were getting these lower class rates are going to pay more, so that's less that other people are going to have to pay.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you. And just as a follow-up, and maybe it's for Chair Dabney, I wasn't really thinking so much about the counties. I was thinking about the cities. So I was thinking if I lived in Minneapolis, and I don't, you know, I would feel all my residents are chipping in to pay for the I'll probably get the name wrong. Was it the
Minneapolis Club? Yeah.
Okay, so the residents of Minneapolis are help paying so that the cost for that facility is less. And are all of the provisions here, additionally, the counties, also that's the case? So I live in Hennepin County, don't live in Minneapolis, but my residents are, you know, very tiny. They're chipping in to have a reduction for that Minneapolis Club facility as well. The whole county. Is that the case in every one of these provisions? Because I heard Representative Loeffler mentioning the CI part, and I hadn't been thinking about the statewide property tax, but certainly these, you know, do you know if each one of these also is I think they're all city and county. We don't have any city-only classifications going on here, correct?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Lincheski. I think you and Representative Erickson actually have hit an important point here. Each of these classifications yields a beneficial property tax impact, city and county level, school district level, and the like, for the properties in these classifications. As the gentleman has indicated, that means a, you know, on some level, a negative impact on all of the other properties in the jurisdiction, homeowners and others. I think Representative Erickson raised the question of, you know, how many restaurants do you have on lakes? The question there, I think, is not only is that fair to the property, to the homeowners, but is that fair, is that appropriate for the restaurant that's across the street? Because not only do you have the place on the lake and they're getting a beneficial then tax consideration, but their competitor is subsidizing, in essence, their competitor's property taxes.
Okay, seeing no further, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just curious why we're just focused on homeowners here. I mean, when we change something in property taxes, it affects all property tax payers, and in fact, we do things all the time that actually add burden to homeowners. I think of a certain Target Center project that where property tax relief was involved, and burden is shifted to homeowners. We do this sort of work all the time, and the impacts are on all taxpayers in the jurisdiction, not just on homeowners.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dabney.
Just to clarify for Representative Torkelson, if we're thinking about half the places in Minnesota are named Target, so it sometimes is confusing. But the recent work around the Target Center in Minneapolis is actually funded by sales taxes, not property taxes. In fact, the action of the legislature moved them off of property taxes.
Okay, seeing no further questions, thank you, Mr. Peterson. And is there anybody else from the public who wishes to testify on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Peterson.
Welcome to the division, Mr. Carlson, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul. I did contact the committee ahead of schedule until I'd like to provide brief comments. And Representative Mahoney, I probably have my fingerprints on more of these than almost anybody in the room. Going back to 1985, when we established a different class rate for seasonal and migrant housing in the Red River Valley when I represented Representative Lean's district. So I appreciate all the time that this committee has spent, devoted to enhancing tourism and enhancing the recreational opportunities that Minnesotans enjoy. And much of what you have done in this committee has been in the property tax code. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of working with many of you, convincing or cajoling several of you to make a number of the changes that are in this bill, and many of them involve Lakeshore, and that I've been involved in. I didn't have the Anoka County Airport in 2003 when they made that change, but most of what I've worked on has been related to Lakeshore. And I can tell you that when we've done the property tax changes that we've done as it relates to Lakeshore, we've worked to bring in the local communities to support the change because they support their tourism-related businesses, and they know how important that is to their local economies. And, they also know the significant problems that seasonal, recreational, property-related businesses have, and one of those problems are one of their single largest operating expenses, which are their property taxes. And so, you know, as you've made changes to Lakeshore property classifications, you need to know that less than 2% of the Lakeshore in Minnesota is devoted to commercial use. And when that Lakeshore is converted to private use, and there are substantial pressures on Lakeshore property owners to convert their property to private use, that denies average Minnesotans their opportunity to have access to the resource. And so that's what the policy decision that we've tried to get the legislature to move to, and successfully so. I don't want to be one of the casualties of war, Representative Dabney, and I want to talk just briefly about three of them and what, you know, really happened. On page 10, you talk about the small bed and breakfasts in towns of under 2,500 that are abut lakes, abut trails. They have a significant impact for their local economies, and the transfer that you're talking about is negligible from the benefit to that property taxpayer who's in business, you know, for maybe a three, at best, four-month season. The benefit to them is real. Without that break, many times they can no longer stay in business. I can tell you for the resorts, that was absolutely the case. So, you know, you provided a small benefit. It took us 2 or 3 years to make that change, to get everyone in agreement, and there really isn't a transfer to even their local competitors, because there really, you know, there aren't people that are similarly situated. Seasonal restaurants on Lakeshore that are only open, they're not open year-round like the McDonald's down the street that are open year-round. They are only open, if you read the bill, they're only open less than 250 days, and they have to meet the requirements of the statute. They're not getting subsidized by their competitors that are open year-round. And the benefit that they provide to tourism and the local economy far outweigh any, we believe, any transfer, negligible transfer of property tax. You know, the Lakeshore restaurants, of which there are very few, I think has the most of them that are seasonal in nature, and that's seven properties. And when one of them goes down, we don't have Representative Marquardt where my lake is in your district. We had eight resorts on our lake. We don't have a single resort or restaurant left on our lake in Becker County, the largest lake in the county. And part of the reason is it is tough to make a go out of a seasonal business. And what the legislature has done by providing this relief is given them a fighting chance to stay in business. And that's really what we're asking. And the last one that I've actively worked on in 2009 is marina operators. Marina operators are, for many people, the only opportunity that they have to access Lakeshore. And, you know, when you go on Lake Minnetonka and you're able to utilize a marina both to store your boat, you're providing more than just access to the lake. You're providing protection against the spread of AIS. When they pull that boat out, they clean it. You're providing economic spinoff for those restaurants that aren't seasonal on Lake Minnetonka that benefit from the use of that marina and the boating that goes on. So, you know, we made the case in 2009 that seasonal marina property shouldn't be taxed at full commercial, because they are not full commercial properties. And so I would ask you, as you look at this, talk to your, you know, your local communities to see if they want their tourism-related businesses to stay there, stay in business, and ask them, is the negligible, and I mean negligible, transfer of property across all of the properties in your county or your city, is it worth it then to not have that seasonal tourism opportunity in your community? And I think the answer is no. We want to keep it the way it is. We want to keep them in business. And that's at least the message I'd like you to at least think of, Mr. Chair and members. Be happy to answer any questions. I did have the chance to go over this, my concerns with Representative Dabney, and we've shared many fun times on the Labor Day start and other tourism-related issues. But this one, I really think the policy decision of trying to keep these businesses going and operating has a great benefit to the state of Minnesota. Tourism is the second largest part of the economy in Minnesota, and employs over 260,000 Minnesotans are employed in tourism. It provides 17% of the state sales tax revenue. It is a huge part of our economy, and the little bit that is in this tax bill helps them, and I hope you'll consider keeping it and not eliminating the breaks, at least on the ones that I've been working on. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Runbeck.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Carlson, we, you know, you're telling us the story that this may be a hardship. Do we, what would be the difference? In an example, a marina, what would be the before and after? property taxes?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rumbeck, thank you for that question. This has been a huge struggle for seasonal recreational property on the lake because the assessors who come up here have a mandate to assess them at their highest and best use. And the highest and best use in many instances for Lakeshore, and I can tell you for resorts and marinas, the highest and best use is probably to break it up and sell it for private development. And so the pressure for that development on that property is significant. And when you have a three-month season to operate and you're taxed at full commercial, it just makes that decision to stay in business even harder. Because what happens is your land becomes more valuable than your ongoing business. And that's the problem that we're trying to address with the changes that we've sought, which is try and keep the business so it's worth more as a going concern than it is just breaking up the value, the breakup value of the land. And that's the problem that we face. Because the assessor has an obligation to assess you at the highest and best use. And 800 feet of lakeshore, its highest and best use is probably to break it up into 150-foot parcels and sell it off. And we don't think that's a good policy for the state.
So, Mr. Chair, then, Mr. Carlson, so it's not a rate issue. It's what is done at that, when you're in that classification, to tell the assessor to do something different.
Yes.
Give it a whole different meaning in terms of the assessment.
That's how we view it.
Mr. Carlson.
Is that
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. Yes, you hit the nail on the head.
Representative Hertaus, I see your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to your comment about the lakeshore property, I think the direction is everything we're talking about is the right one to reduce the amount of classifications. And there is immense pressure for highest and best use. And ironically, we want to have policies that preserve our natural resource assets. And unfortunately, you know, the county assessor position is that based on zoning that every piece of lakeshore is subject to be divisible by whatever the applicable zoning is for that area. And so that's another complication of seeing all of our lakeshore in Minnesota get intensely undeveloped because the pressure is to do just that, whereas as a classification, lakeshore is lakeshore. But unfortunately, the values get assessed on a lineal foot basis. And we're seeing the same thing with regard to farmland. Farmland that's not now productive but has old growth forest on it suddenly is worth a whole lot more money. So the values have risen dramatically. And this is part of the rhetoric and complaint with some of the farm increases in the tax issue as well. So, you know, this is a struggle. And on one hand, we want to save the resource, and we're doing all sorts of things and programs to save lakeshore and frontage and have incentives. On the other hand, we're taxing the hell out of it, so you do develop it. So it's a conundrum.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, you absolutely hit the nail on the head, and that's why we work with the assessors to get the language that you have right now. And what you look at, what we developed in, I know Representative Abrams was the chair of the House Tax Committee when we moved away from just a lower rate and we moved to a tiered rate so that the people that get the best break out of this property tax system are the smallest resorts or the smallest recreational property at the first 500,000, and then it incrementally goes up. We did that to get away from the problem of being assessed. We're still assessed at the highest and best use, but the tier system that we put in 2007 got at that problem, so it would hold your taxes down so that you can have a chance to stay in business. And in addition to the break and wanting to preserve the resource, you know, I can't emphasize it enough, whether it's your family experience at a resort, that is for most people their ability to enjoy much of the natural resources that we have in Minnesota, whether it's through a marina or visiting a resort, because they don't have the means, to purchase lakeshore or to have a cabin. And unless it's been in your family for years, it's very difficult. And that's why resorts, and I'm passionate about helping them and other lakeshore businesses, is because that is part of our fabric, and that's part of what average Minnesotans can utilize to enjoy that resource. And that's why I think these are important provisions.
Representative Hertaus.
No, I'm finished. Thank you.
Seeing no additional questions, is there anyone else from the public who'd like to testify? Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Seeing none, Representative Dabney, would you like to renew your motion on House File 1884?
I would. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Representative Torkelson.
Ben, did you walk away with my...
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson, would you like to move House File 2102 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the division report? That's what I'm looking for.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson, I do apologize. Time has gotten tight. I know you do have a significant number of testifiers as well. I'd like if we could keep this as tight as possible out of respect for the other committee members' time. I would point out to the testifiers that ditto is an appropriate response. As you get up, if you basically want to say what the other folks just said, ditto. But Representative Torkelson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we will try to move this as quickly as we can. As you know, or most of you probably know, there is a change in last year's tax bill that requires assessors to value conservation lands at their highest and best use. This is a major change in how we've done business here in the state of Minnesota in the past, and this bill would actually just put us back to the way it was prior to last year's tax bill, where local assessors have the ability to determine how they will assess those conservation lands. With that, Mr. Chair, I would stand for any questions from the committee, or if you would like to proceed to testifiers, that's just fine.
Any questions from committee members? Seeing none. There are a number of individuals who have registered previously with the committee. I'll start with Karen, is it Flom? All right, Ms. Flom, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Karen Flom, and I'm an employee of the Renville County Soil and Water Conservation District in Olivia, Minnesota, and we also cover a couple of townships representative Torkelson's area. So some of the things I will be talking about, and I will stay brief, I am here to explain a little bit about how we use conservation easements in the intensely agricultural areas of the state, and that would include Renville and Redwood counties. We use conservation easements to effectively address serious water quality and water quantity issues associated with our intensely farmed landscapes. Conservation easements not only address water issues, but they also provide some badly needed habitat for wildlife. Renville County actually annually ranks near the top for corn, soybean, sweet corn, and sugar beet production. And generally, if we're number one, Redwood's number two, and vice versa on the corn and soybeans. An extensive system of public and private drainage has resulted in 98% of our pre-settlement wetlands being drained, 99% of our grasslands have been lost, and 90% of our land base is in agricultural production. In recent years, the Renville SWCDs work closely with our County Drainage Authority to help address issues involving both water quality and quantity associated with our agricultural drainage system. We have 851 miles of dug open ditches that are direct conduits to the Minnesota River. The Conservation Easement Buffer Program is currently being used to help improve management of this extensive drainage system. Conservation easements are directed at moving farming practices away from the county ditch systems by using grass buffer strips. And the easements will have an even greater role to play in water management as we continue to work with egg producers to improve the water quality and reduce the water quantity delivered to our drainage systems. Another unique thing about Renville County, and I believe Redwood and us are also number one and two, we have over 500 conservation easements in Renville County. These are voluntarily entered into by our landowners, and we are number one. And that shows you the popularity of the easements with our individual landowners. In addition to these popular riparian buffers on our drainage ditches, our landowners have also chosen to enroll poorly drained land. And on those, we've had wetland complexes restored. They've also enrolled marginal land, and that has often been prone to erosion, like sandy areas, and those areas were planted to grasses and reduced erosion. Prior to the passage of last year's bill, Statute 273-117, the local assessors valued both cropland and easement land based on the current sales in the township. In our part of the state, cropland is valued at up to $9,000 to $10,000 an acre. Easement land has been roughly valued at $1,000 an acre based on the recent sales. And that statute that was passed last year takes that decision out of the hands of the local assessors, and it's a departure from how our property has historically been assessed. It also unduly penalizes the landowners who choose to enroll this marginal land into a perpetual conservation easement. I believe that probably most of you are familiar with the fact that both the state Reinvest in Minnesota and the federal Wetland Reserve Program easement conditions prohibit cropping, grazing, or developing the property forever. But the landowner does still own the land, and they are responsible for maintenance. Without a repeal of the statute, the easement program enrollment will suffer, and the ability of the local SWCD offices to provide more resource protection and management will be compromised. And thank you for consideration of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from members? Seeing none, I see we have a couple more testifiers on the list. Don Arnosti, Policy Director from Audubon, Minnesota.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Don Arnosti. Thank you. I'm the Policy Director for Audubon, Minnesota, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of this bill. Audubon, Minnesota, it represents 17,000 members and supporters across the state. One of our longstanding priorities for 25 years has been the RIM Reserve Conservation Easement Program, which is a private land conservation easement program with voluntary landowner participation to protect, tends to be flood-prone and erosion-prone lands, typically on agricultural lands, in areas of the state where we have a high priority need for both water protection, habitat protection, and other things of that nature. This, at least to us, surprise change in the tax code was an unwelcome shock last year in terms of a departure from the ordinary practice of directing assessors to take into account factors that actually affect the market value of a property. And this current law, which would be repealed with this piece of legislation, restoring the law that was in place less than a year ago, is one that we favor because we think that that's appropriate for landowners that are participating in a program such as the RIM Reserve Program to actually have their land taxed at the residual value that remains with them. They're voluntarily participating in a public program that provides a lot of public benefits, and we think that their taxes ought to reflect what the residual value of their land is. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Thank you, Mr. Arnosti. Seeing none, I see we do have next on our list is Mr. Lance Ness, Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance.
We support Representative Torkelson's bill. As previous people said, I was supposed to say ditto, so keep it short. But we do think this is a severe hindrance to the Reinvest in Minnesota program, and I don't think that people, when they pass this, took that into account. And so we strongly support Representative Torkelson's bill.
Thank you. Questions from members? See none. And my apologies do go out to John Curry. He was next on our list before Mr. Ness. So, Mr. Curry, please come forward for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'll try to get over that slight, but I appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
My name is John Curry. I'm with the Minnesota Land Trust, and we are a statewide nonprofit that works with private landowners. Conservation easements is kind of our stock and trade, our major tool for doing conservation around the state. We are here today to say a few good words on behalf of conservation easements and to support Representative Torkelson's bill to repeal last year's misguided tax law. First of all, let me say that for those of you who aren't as in touch with this bill, the House did the right thing last year. We are hopeful you'll do the right thing again this year. This came strictly from the Senate bill, and it was one of those compromises in conference committee that we hope to get undone today with Representative Torkelson and your help. Around the state, there are over 12,000 conservation easements. My organization represents 500 of those, about 40,000 acres, but there are 12,000 easements around the state that total over 900,000 acres. That is comparable to Minnesota's wildlife management area system run by the DNR, which is about 1.29 million acres. There are 76% of all lands in private ownerships. If Minnesota is to pursue any of its many conservation strategies, from water quality to wildlife, forests, and prairies, we need that 76% of the land base to participate and to partner with the state. Importantly, if you have a conservation easement, those are often donated. The vast majority, over 90% of our conservation easements, are donated in full or in part, a charitable donation recognized by the IRS. With the IRS recognizes these because there are public benefits that are guaranteed, whether they're scenic, water quality, or other benefits. A couple of things I want to mention in particular because this is the jurisdiction of the Tax Committee. In 2013, the legislative auditor investigated conservation easements. With some criticism and a lot of laudatory comments, the legislative auditor in 2013 said the legislature should amend Minnesota statutes 273.117 to require tax assessors to consider the effect of conservation easements. So that is the opposite of what was done last year. The auditor said the legislature should require tax assessors to consider the value. That's not what this legislation would do here today. It just returns it to assessor discretion. I also, as I pointed out, Section 170H of the IRS tax code recognizes conservation easements as a charitable donation. And currently, Minnesota is the only state that does not allow fair market value of conservation lands. Most states, in fact, require it, as the legislative auditor would suggest Minnesota do. Most states require that assessors consider conservation easements values on a property. All others except for Minnesota leave it up to the assessor's discretion. The Minnesota Land Trust has been around since 1991. Most of our conservation easements are no longer the original landowner that we worked with, but the second or third or fourth generation landowners. And I reviewed one of our easements today in Cottage Grove from 1994. It's called the Otis Farms easement. This is a 155-acre tract of land in the middle of Cottage Grove. And if you look at a map of it, you will see that there are three and four homes to the acre, standard suburban development and cul-de-sacs all around this 155-acre forested property. Mr. Chair, if the 2013 law had been in effect in 1994, the Otis Farms would be taxed as if it had three and four homes on it for each of those 155 acres. And yet that acreage sits there for the public benefit, scenic and nature and beauty for everyone to enjoy. Regardless of how this committee thinks about conservation easements, the final issue I'd like to bring to you is whether or not last year's law was the right tool. In property taxes, you know that Minnesota weights, we tier, we stratify, we apply certain formulas, we exempt certain things. All of those activities are done based on the fair market value of the property. Last year's bill doesn't do any of those manipulations after determining fair market value. It directly puts a stake in the heart of the fair market value, and it says certain Minnesotans are not eligible to the same fair market value treatment as others, and those Minnesotans are those that have chosen to put a conservation easement on their property. Thank you. I stand for questions.
Seeing no questions, I appreciate your testimony, Mr. Curry.
Thank you.
And next on the list, I have Sheila Vanney, Assistant Director, Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Welcome to the division, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Sheila Vanney, Assistant Director for the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. Our organization represents the SWCDs across Minnesota, and we want to thank Representative Torkelson for bringing forward this bill. We have concerns about the potential chilling effect that the latest change is going to have on one of the most important tools we have in our toolbox to retire marginal ag lands and in perpetuity and protect that land. So we'd really like to see, our position is that we'd really like to see the discretion go back to the local assessors for them to determine at what level these properties should be taxed. With that, I would stand for any questions.
Seeing no questions, I appreciate your testimony, Ms. Vanney.
And in the spirit, I should say, of Chairman Dabney's comments earlier, I would also echo ditto to many of the earlier testifiers.
Thank you. Okay, and next on the list I have Tom Spreck, President, Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Tim Spreck. I'm president of the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, which is commonly referred to by the acronym MOHA. We represent the hunting and fishing and trapping interests throughout the state, and we have two concerns that we think are being addressed here by Representative Torkelson today. We'd like to speak in favor of this particular proposed action. Number one would be opportunity for hunting and fishing and trapping throughout the state of Minnesota. To the extent that lands are put into easement and opportunities exist, that's a good thing, because there's a lot of people that don't have opportunity. They live in the metro area, they don't own large tracts of land, they don't have access to these lands. So we want to make sure that that is being taken into account, and in order to encourage people to put their land into conservation, we have to offer a tax incentive for these people. Otherwise, there's no reason for them to do so. Number two would be obviously wildlife production and habitat. In the tax bill last year, there was a provision made for riparian land, but unfortunately the upland pieces were not addressed, and we're very concerned that upland property would not be put into conservation because they would not get this type of tax break, which takes away a lot of your habitat production areas, especially for waterfowl and pheasant. Particularly for pheasant and grouse. So we would like to make sure that the committee takes all these things into account. We come from a little different perspective than some of the other folks that have testified today, but for us it's all about opportunity and wildlife production. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sprague. Questions from members? Seeing none, I appreciate your testimony. And also on the list, we have Mr. John Jashke, Executive Director, Minnesota Board of Soil and Water Resources. Welcome to the Vision, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. John Jashke, Executive Director, Board of Water and Soil Resources. I won't repeat some of the points that were made earlier. I will, as one of the agencies responsible for carrying out the program that's been referred to earlier, the Reinvest in Minnesota program, I can tell you a little bit about how that works. I mean, obviously, it's about getting a conservation easement. We've done 6,000 or so of those over the last 25 years. The statute that was in place prior to last session was the one that had carried the day for that 25 years and had worked very fairly. I've come to appreciate the challenges that assessors have. Their jobs are maybe more difficult than many. And I want to thank the Department of Revenue for working with us on trying to move this legislation into reality, as difficult as it has been, because you're asking assessors to do something that's contrary to the way they typically operate, which is to freeze in time a value on a property that, as time moves forward, would make no sense. And so we do support this bill as it's currently written. I want to add one more point that was made. Mr. Curry mentioned that this came from the Senate side. One of the things that we have commissioned along with the Department of Natural Resources is a study to actually get some data. So if this legislation, as it was put together last year, is in fact needed, we first should repeal the language and get the data to look at to make sure that we're doing the right thing and making sure we're being able to analyze the consequences. We've commissioned Dr. Steve Taff and Dr. Mike Kilgore, one an ag economist and one a forest economist at the University of Minnesota, to do this analysis. And they've got the early draft of that work done, but it's not yet complete. And they've got some findings that could be insightful to this committee and others. They aren't here and they aren't quite ready, but when they have their work a little further along, they would be happy to share their findings with you. And again, they're looking at it both from the economic side of it because of the valuations, but also being able to factor in some of the ecological benefits that easements have taken on in Minnesota, a very important role over a long period of time. There's differences, of course, in the forested areas of the state versus agricultural areas, and so some of those important distinctions are going to be part of their analysis. You also heard about wetlands and riparian buffers and uplands, and so their data will be able to tell us a lot more about how this legislation, as it was put in place last year, or as if it were repealed, how that would affect Minnesotans, both from an economic point of view as well as from an ecological point of view. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jashke. Seeing no questions from members, appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Last on my list here, I do have Mr. Mark Peterson, again, Cass County Assessor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome back to the division, and please state your name for the record.
Mark Peterson, I'm the Cass County Assessor, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Association of Assessing Officers. And out of respect for Representative Daphne's request, I would answer ditto to all we've heard to this point, and also we are in support of this bill basically because it does give the assessors the opportunity to review these easements and value these properties based on the retained bundle of rights, which do affect the market value, the fair market value of these properties. So we would like the opportunity to be able to do that. We understand that that's probably a very fair and equitable way of assessing these.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Questions from members? Seeing none, is there anybody else from the public who wishes to testify on the bill? Seeing none, Representative Torkelson, would you like to renew your motion?
I would like to make a couple comments first, Mr.
Chair. Please do. Yes.
Okay, I know we're out of time, but I just wanted to emphasize the fact that this provision came from the Senate. It was never heard in the House. It was put into the tax bill in conference committee. This is an important issue, as you can see, that brings in a variety of interest groups, some of whom I'm not always at the table with, but I am on this particular issue. There is a provision in the legislation for riparian lands, but it does not address the upland issue, as was noted today by testifiers. And the last point I would like to make is that the Department of Revenue has decided that this only affects newly enrolled lands. So if you've got land that's in a conservation easement and has a lower tax provision, you are going to sustain that lower property tax classification. But if you renew new lands into the programs, you are going to be subject to these highest and best use classifications. So it creates an uneven playing field across the jurisdiction, with depending on if your property was depending on the date of enrollment into a conservation program. This to me seems ultimately unfair and inappropriate. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will renew my motion to include this in your report.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Torkelson. Representative Faust, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes of our last meeting on February 26th?
Yes, and I would move approval of those minutes.
Thank you very much. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the February 26th minutes, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, thank you very much. We are adjourned.